session. This is the Wednesday, March 14th afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Udaly?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here. Why don't you go ahead and read the statement, please?
Sure.
Thanks.
Okay. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer will preserve order and decorum during the City Council meetings so that everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in the council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to speak briefly on any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations, will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Thank you. So we're here today to hear public testimony on the 2035 Comprehensive Plan, the MAP Refinement Project. On April 4th, the council will deliberate and vote on amendments that were the subject of the public hearing, which is today on March 14th. Carla, could you please read the item?
Item 257, amend the 2035 Comprehensive Plan map and amend the official city zoning map to carry out Portland's 2035 Comprehensive Plan.
So at this point, I'll invite Eric Engstrom, Marty Stockton, and other BPS staff to come up and introduce our meeting today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler. My name is Eric Engstrom. I manage the Comprehensive Planning Group at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And with me here is Marty Stockton. She is with our district liaison program and was the project manager for this effort that we're bringing you today. Before she goes into more details about the project, I'd like to just briefly put some context on why we're here and what this is. Three of you participated in the comprehensive plan adoption in 2016, and two of you are new since then, so a brief refresher on that. In June of 2016, you adopted the new comprehensive plan, and that was done under the state mandated periodic review process, which is a state requirement that we periodically refresh and update our growth management plans. This was the largest update since 1980, and it was a multi-year effort that culminated in the 2016 votes. In 2016, you both adopted the new plan as well as adopted a package of implementing code amendments to the zoning code and maps to carry it out. The plan also includes projects, the citywide infrastructure plan, as well as a plan map and a policy document. This month, we're bringing you three different projects to help ensure a smooth transition to the new comprehensive plan. And you may recall that you voted in the fall for a short delay in the implementation of the new plan until May of this year. And that has allowed us some time to both sort out appeals at the state level that are going on, as well as deal with loose ends that to clean up and ensure a smooth implementation. And so the three packages coming to you this month are all in the spirit of cleaning up loose ends that affect the implementation of the new comprehensive plan. And there are three different packages. In general, they are fairly technical and have pretty minor implications, but a few of them do have some policy implications and deserve some discussion. But it's a fairly thick package, we realize, with a lot of small details. So as we go, don't hesitate to ask questions. It's a pretty confusing bundle, and we acknowledge that because it's pulling together a lot of different unrelated pieces into one package. The first thing that you're hearing about, which is the subject of today's hearing, is cleanup of the maps, the zoning map or the comprehensive plan map. And so there's a number of sites that Marty will be discussing that we've bundled together as a project to refine the map. Next week, you'll be hearing about the zoning code refinement bundle, as well as the final package to complete the new transportation system plan. And under Oregon state land use law, transportation planning and land use planning are kind of tied at the hip. And so the city's new transportation system plan has been traveling along with the project to update the comprehensive plan. And that final step is happening next week. And that's part of our effort to ensure that this all goes smoothly when we turn on the new comprehensive plan on May 24th. Because of that fixed date that we've adopted, we want to ensure that there's a smooth process of considering these refinements, and the final vote, the second reading final vote of these three things will all occur on May 24th so that they occur with the adoption of the new comprehensive plan. And since you're amending the new plan, that final vote has to occur after the plan is actually in effect, which will be the case on the afternoon of the 24th.
So the state has approved our comprehensive plan?
There's an appeal still pending, and actually there's a hearing tomorrow in Salem that will be making our final arguments. We're optimistic that will go well and that we will have state acknowledgement by May 24th. And if there's any complications to that, we'll come back and brief you on that.
Okay.
Final thing to mention is that this is not the Central City Plan. I know you've been dealing with that a lot in the last few months, and so this is about the citywide comprehensive plan, and so most of the mapping questions we're dealing with today are outside the Central City.
Great.
Marty.
Thank you. My name is Marty Stockton, as Eric mentioned, and I served as a project manager on this project, and I'm also part of the district liaison program of district planners. I serve Southeast Portland. That is my district. Along with the project team, we had three other of my teammates. So Nan Stark, who is the district liaison for North and Northeast Portland, Joan Fredrickson, who's the district liaison for West, and Leslie Lum, who is the district liaison for East Portland. So that's what made up the project team for this project. So I wanted to refresh our city council members that were here at the time of adoption in June and December of 2016, but then also bring our new members kind of on the same page. The origin of the map refinement project was from the ordinance that was adopted along with the implementation package in December of 2016. And there was what we call Exhibit O, which was a short list of about 13 sites that council was interested in. They had received testimony on, but at that time they could not make an action on this short list of sites. And so this Exhibit O was a direction by City Council for our bureau to do either an evaluation or a reevaluation of these sites in a legislative process. And so, again, that is the origin of this particular project. And so this is also one of four categories that of map changes that we're including in the map refinement project. The other three categories are the reconciliation of land use and zoning maps that have been occurring at the Bureau of Development Services. So when we have the effective date of the new comprehensive plan map and zoning map on May 24th, that essentially will override anything that has gone before Bureau of Development Services in this interim time. So we are tracking those very closely and are coordinating with Bureau of Development Services staff to make sure that we bring those in. And so that is, again, category number two of packaged map changes.
So that means if an applicant has gone through a quasi-judicial zone change, they've gotten approval, but it's different from what we approved in the comprehensive plan map, then we change the comprehensive plan map.
So exactly, we need to pull those in. So that's the purpose of category number two.
And
exactly.
In some cases, the zoning categories have themselves changed, so we need to transfer that what they got to the equivalent in the new plan.
So if anything went to a commercial zone, so neighborhood commercial 1 or CN1, we need to make sure it's part of the new commercial mixed zones, so CM1 in that case.
Great. Thank you.
So the third item or category is changes to avoid the creation of new nonconforming development. So there are a number of areas citywide that we are tracking where there has been very recent development activity, for example, along Sandy Boulevard or in the Vancouver-Williams corridor or along the Northwest Moreland area. There were some areas that there were some what we call down zoning. So that means that the development capacity or the height or floor area ratio at the time of adoption was reduced in the comprehensive plan and zoning maps. But development has since occurred. And so, again, there's a bit of a reconciliation so we don't create new nonconforming development. And then the final fourth category is a package of technical and policy-related map changes. These are not very exciting, but they definitely include a lot of split zoned sites, cleanup of our overlays, finding new nonconforming commercial sites, and a lot of bureau-coordinated map changes. So we've been working with Bureau of Environmental Services, the Housing Bureau, and Portland Parks and Rec to incorporate some, you know, recent acquisitions that those bureaus have made. And then also in this group, there is a concerted effort to coordinate with our affordable housing providers. I have mentioned the Portland Housing Bureau, but that also includes Home Forward, Reach CDC, Save In CDC, PCRI, Rose CDC, and others. And so where appropriate, we are coordinating with them on some select map changes. So I wanted to just show you kind of a slide of everything. And so this is the citywide map and then the colors of the map changes. And you will see that there are 177 map change sites for a total of 184.5 acres, which equals 0.19% of our land use. And so I just wanted to kind of give you a scale of what's included in this project. Again, it's 0.19 of the land area is included in a map change in this project. This is maybe a little easier to see, and so this is exactly the same map, but we call this a scatter map, and so you can see kind of the sites pop out a bit. They are color-coded, so again, the four categories that I just walked through, the blue are the that were included in the December 2016 Council Directive. The green on the map are where there is a reconciliation with the quasi-judicial map changes that Bureau of Development Services has been implementing. The red on the map is, again, where we want to avoid new nonconforming development. And then the yellow, which is really the bulk of what's included in the project, is other technical and policy-related map changes. And I think this slide's important. Most people actually don't know that we have a two-map system in the city of Portland. We have the comprehensive plan map and then the zoning map. And so we are actually proposing changes on both maps within this project. And so on the comprehensive plan map, there are the land use designations, so whether a property is commercial or residential or open space, and as well as the center boundaries. And that was a new inclusion that was adopted in the June 2016 comprehensive plan map. So for example, the Hollywood Town Center or Lentz Town Center, there's actual boundaries to those geographies. The zoning map has your base zones, and so whether you have an R5 zone or a new commercial mixed-use 1 zone, you have your overlay zones, your plan districts, and your trails.
And just briefly, that the distinction between the comprehensive plan map and the zoning map is that the comprehensive plan map gives you the long-range vision and the generalized idea of the future. The zoning map is what you can get a permit to do today.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. I wanted to include this slide because on the first, or going back, overlay zones, a bulk of what is proposed as far as overlay zone changes has to do with the removal of the buffer overlay zone. So in the December 2016 adoption of the zoning map, there was the removal of the buffer overlay zone on all commercial zoning that had a mapped buffer overlay. And so if you look at this map and see the red on the map, that has already been adopted as a removal on the buffer overlay. The blue on the map is where there is a current proposal before you, which is now the removal of the buffer overlay zone on the employment and industrial lands.
I'm not sure I recall what a buffer overlay zone is.
Sure, no, that's a really good point. The buffer overlay zone is... it is mapped on sites where you have, in this case, an employment zone that abuts against a residential zone. And there's oftentimes different widths at that, how that buffer overlay zone is mapped. But in that overlay, it relates to a code section, the buffer overlay code chapter, which has... I would say a higher level of setback requirements, landscape requirements, whether or not vehicle access is allowed within that overlay, and also it talks about exterior work activities or storage in that area. We have been working, this is actually tied to the code reconciliation project, which is the project that Eric mentioned that will come before you next week, next Wednesday. But in this project, similar to what was done in the zoning code in December of 2016, where a lot of those good standards, whether it was for setbacks, landscaping, or exterior work activities, instead of having that live in the overlay zone, it was actually moved into the base zone. And so that's what happened during the mixed-use zones project. Similarly, we're proposing to do the same thing. So it's a little bit of a structural, where we're taking those standards that are in, that live currently in the overlay zone, and we're moving them into the employment and industrial zones in the code reconciliation project that you'll listen to next week.
One of the reasons for doing that is that the buffer overlay approach requires us to map it and acknowledge all those instances where those two zones intersect. Putting it in the base zone doesn't depend on our mapping it. So currently there's a lot of those places where residential and commercial or employment are abutting, but there is no buffer overlay. So putting it in the base zone provides a more uniform treatment of all properties where those two zones are abutting each other.
So could you just explain... for those of us who are not experts at mapping and planning, what are we really talking about? Give me a concrete, how wide? What are you talking about?
It governs setbacks and, as Marty said, whether or not you can have vehicle access along that property, for example, truck access to an industrial site or something, and it covers landscaping standards. And so we're talking about, is it, somewhere between 10 and 20 feet of setback and landscaping standards. It's
so
different in each zone.
It will define whether or not on a given property you can actually have access or not have access. Is that correct?
On that particular property line, yeah.
Where the buffer zone is,
right.
Between
so on a corner lot, if the buffer was on one edge and not on the other, that would sort of force the access.
So it would say on that edge, no egress.
Right.
And then you mentioned landscaping. Tell me specifically, what are we talking
about
here?
Yeah, so we typically, when we have a landscape buffer, we have two standards. We have either what's called the L3, which is a high screen standard, where you would have like a 5-foot setback of 6-foot-tall evergreen shrubs, or you would have what's called the L4 standard, which is a masonry wall. And so, again, we have areas with the residential abutting against employment that don't currently have those buffering setback and landscaping requirements.
So this will require one of those two things.
It will require both.
It will require both a wall and landscaping.
So the people who already have the buffer overlay will perceive a slight difference in the details of the standards, but the content is close. For people who don't already have the buffer overlay, this will introduce an elevated setback and landscaping.
So the goal here is to create a consistent standard.
Exactly.
Is that what you're trying
to
do? And then tell me a little bit about the setback. Because I'm sure when people hear about a buffer between an industrial zone and a residential neighborhood, that already piques my interest a lot. And so what are we really talking about here in terms of setbacks?
So a lot of the employment in industrial zones don't actually have setbacks because of the nature of that. And so this special situation imposes a setback of somewhere between 5 and 25 feet, which
then
that landscaping...
5 to 25 feet, it would also then add... along the buffer zone, the requirement for shrubbery
or a wall.
It's not and, it's or?
Correct.
Okay.
And it restricts the exterior work activities in that area as well, so you couldn't have like the lumber yard stacking right up against the property line fence or something.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. I appreciate that digression. Thanks.
And I think next week, when you have the code reconciliation project, if that is a continued interest to you, especially after the testimony you hear, again, the person that's writing the code will be here before you next week.
Okay. I just wanted to have some sense of the magnitude of what we're actually discussing there.
The two projects relate because this project is dealing with the map change and the other one is dealing with the code change. So.
Okay. And the consequence, and I'm sorry, colleagues, I just have this last question. The consequence of not doing this is you have non-uniform standards.
Correct.
And let me ask the obvious question. So what?
We would like to see a little more uniform treatment in this situation. We think there are folks who are living next to industrial and employment districts that would benefit from this, a more equitable treatment of this.
Okay, that's fair. I appreciate it.
It's so not the end of the world, frankly, though.
Okay, I was just trying to figure out, so this is an equity play. Is that a fair generalization?
Yes.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Well, it's a standardization.
I think that's a better...
It doesn't take into account equity. It takes into account what the rules are, making them clear.
Okay, so it
would be
so
an equal treatment if you are residential zone next to employment or industrial.
And
correct.
It may save some time at BDS because they won't have to look up the specific location to answer this question anymore. It's a more general standard.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to touch upon some early testimony that you have been receiving. So as of 5 p.m. yesterday, there had been 34 items of testimony that council has received. In that grouping, there have been a number of new requests for map changes. There have been, again, concern over the removal of the buffer overlay zone, both generally but specific to the Willamette Heights neighborhood within the Northwest District Association. Additionally, there's been testimony that we heard when we were before the Planning and Sustainability Commission, but that testimony is continuing before you regarding a map change from CM2 to CM3D on Fremont and Mississippi. So we expect more testimony on that site as well. And then generally sites that received testimony either in opposition or in support on the proposed draft that came out in the fall, we are continuing to hear from community members on certain sites. So just a process update. We have been at this for about a year. We had a early discussion draft that came out in June of last year where that generated 53 public comments. On that discussion draft, we did send out a courtesy notice to both affected property owners, affected occupants, and folks within 100 feet of the proposed map changes. On the proposed draft that went before the Planning and Sustainability Commission, that is where we did send out the required Measure 56 public notice, as well as continuing on with the courtesy notices and the legislative notice. We had 176 items of public testimony. And now we have the recommended draft, which is what is before you. It was released on February 5th. We sent out our public notices, legislative and courtesy notices, starting on February 16th.
I just want to highlight the courtesy notice. Part of that is under the new comprehensive plan, we're really making an effort to be more inclusive with who is notified of land use actions. And so notifying occupants or renters essentially is a change that was not our practice prior to this new comprehensive plan, and is we're attempting to be a more regular practice going forward.
So I'll probably want to come back up and talk about next steps, but we're having the hearing today. We intend or have a tentative date for council deliberation on April 4th. And then on May 24th, we have the council vote on the second reading. We are proposing for there to be an effective date also on May 24th. Initially, we were hoping to have the effective date actually go into June. It's not a practice that we like to do emergency ordinances, but there are just too many linkages between the zoning code that has to go into effect on May 24th and the map. So the buffer overlay being one, some additions and removals of RH zoning tied to the 4-to-1 FAR maps, and then all the changes that we're doing to the plan districts. They're very much tied to the zoning code chapters, and so just wanted to share that with you.
Good. And Marty, I might ask you at the very end of the session to put that slide up again, just
absolutely,
so people know where the next steps are.
So I'm definitely anxious to hear public testimony, so I am including my overview.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any questions before we move on? So at this point, let's move on to the minor and technical amendments and errata. We're referencing the March 8th and March 13th staff memos that were distributed this afternoon. Can we get a motion to incorporate these amendments?
So moved.
We have a motion from Commissioner Saltzman.
Second.
Second from Commissioner Fritz. Are there any other amendments that council members would like to declare? I think Commissioner Fish had...
I have two amendments,
two?
Mayor.
Okay.
Let me hand them out. This is a Fish Amendment number one. And I'll explain them in a second. Actually, I'll do them in sequence. Colleagues, I have two different amendments that I would like to introduce this afternoon. The first is in support of testimony provided by the Bureau of Environmental Services through the Bureau's Willing Seller Program. We have purchased a number of properties that are in different floodplains. The Bureau purchases properties like these that are prone to damage due to flood. We pay fair market price for the homes, we demolish the buildings, and then we restore the property to a more natural state that helps prevent future flooding and returns natural habitat for plants and wildlife. The Bureau has identified 13 of these properties that are currently zoned as residential. I am asking the council to convert these properties from their base residential zone to open space. And I have asked that these 13 properties collectively be titled Fish Amendment 1.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fish on Fish 1 and a second from Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Dan. And I'm now going to circulate what is Fish 2. There's some extras. And I'll just read a quick statement about this as it's being distributed. My second amendment comes at the request of Albertina Kerr. They have sent in testimony requesting a zone change on their properties from residential to commercial mixed use. The properties are in prime locations and are ideal for redevelopment. And Albertina Kerr is interested in redeveloping these underused properties and building housing with commercial space for their own purposes. One of their properties has split zoning on it with R1 on one portion and CS on the other portion, although the central city plan will update this to be CM3. Their other property is also zoned R1. Their specific request is to change the base zoning on all three lots from R1 to CM3, and I will introduce this as Fish Amendment 2.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fish and a second from Commissioner Saltzman.
Clarify.
Sure.
Either for Ms. Stockton or for Commissioner Fish. Obviously, the first one I'm very supportive of. The second one, were these changes requested as part of the comprehensive plan or are these new?
Marty?
So these are new. It's a new request that we've received as of this comment period.
So the Planning Commission hasn't considered them either?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz, you have an amendment.
Thank you. I have an amendment which I'm passing out now.
Thank you.
And that is Portland Parks and Recreation submitted two trail requests which were inadvertently left off. So we did get them in on time. It's just that they got missed. And so I'm requesting the following regional trail segments be added to the comprehensive plan map. The first is Northwest Thurman connecting to the Willamette Greenway Trail along Northwest 15th, which is approximately 425 feet of trail. And the second is the East Delta Park connection to Marine Drive Trail, which is approximately 1,300 feet of trail.
Second. So Commissioner Fritz moves. And I second what we'll call Fritz number one for today. Colleagues, are there any other? Okay, great. So,
here, can I just publicly
Fish?
Say that yesterday Marty and the Intrepid team came to my office for a boot camp exercise, walked me through all of these things, took my questions, some of which were pretty basic, and I think the public doesn't always get a sense of, in addition to all the work that staff has to do getting ready for hearings and interacting on things, they also have to bring commissioners up to speed. And I really appreciate the time and care that staff takes to make sure that we're well prepared for these hearings. And Marty, thank you very much.
Well said. So now we're going to hear public testimony about the 2035 Comprehensive Plan, the MAP Refinement Project, now as amended. When you come up to testify, please begin each comment to the degree that you're able with the map change number and or the subject property addresses so that we can be clear with regard to what your comments are referencing. But before we start with regular testimony, we have a tradition in the chamber. If there's anybody with young children or special needs, we would encourage you to confer with the council clerk and we'll get you up as soon as possible. So with that, Carla, why don't we have the first three, please?
The first three are David Cole, Doug Klotz, and Django Emerson, and they will be followed by Jeffrey Clare, Dana Kraschek, and Robert Johnson.
Very good. And for obvious reasons, if you could state your name for the record, 3 minutes, you'll see a light that turns yellow when you have 30 seconds left. It turns red when your time is expired. Please let us know if you are a lobbyist. If you're here representing an organization, that's helpful as well. We don't need to know your specific address unless it's germane to the revisions that you're referencing. Thank you.
Hello.
Hi. My name is Dave Cole. I'm here about change number 1799 for 705 North Fremont and 815 North Fremont. I'm here representing about 30 people who live on or around these properties. Over a year ago, the former council voted in favor of rezoning these two properties from R25 to CM2. And at that time, we, all the neighbors and everyone that lived there, considered that to be an equitable compromise between adding density in the city and taking into account that these properties immediately border residential homes on Albina and Borthwick. Last year, the property owner of 815 asked BPS to further upzone their property to CM3. It's a small residential lot. And convinced PCRI, who has 705, an affordable housing complex there called Elroy Gardens, to come along with that. Those of us who live in the neighborhood are worried that the six stories that CM3 provides right next to single and double family homes is going a little too far. And that CM2 that was already approved and really nicely stepped down from all the crazy development that's going on across the street to begin with. 30 of us submitted a petition to PSC, the Boyce Elliott Neighborhood Association, SBPS, to reconsider BPS's own staff recommended to PSC that keeping with the original CM2 designation was the best idea, but PSC decided to move forward with the CM3 zoning anyway. PCRI, which operates the affordable housing on 705, has told BPS that they can only afford to build the CM2 size and were fine with the original designation. The worry there is that with the new valuable zoning, they could be motivated to sell to a developer that would just put in more luxury condos and permanently displace the residents that live there today. Those members have been here before this council and testified. Other members of the community, people who have lived in the neighborhood for over 50 years, of all backgrounds, economic and racial, have given testimony saying that this sort of upzoning is going to be too much. And only the owner of 815 and the PSC want this change. I understand we need more density in our city. I just hope that we can find a balance between the homeowners and the people who live in that neighborhood and the developers and the renters that follow them. And I hope that we're not all separated by six stories when that happens.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Doug Klotz, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm speaking on, you should have a copy of this in front of you. Speaking about 1717 and 1800, which is a property, several properties on Northeast Broadway, Northeast Halsey, and Northeast 45th. This is a large parcel. It's all currently zoned RX, and RX is not going to be allowed outside Central City now, so that it was needed to be changed. What Planning and Sustainability Commission recommends is these all be rezoned to RH with a 4-to-1 FAR. Originally, the planner recommended a lower zone, but Planning and Sustainability Commission thought that that was more appropriate. And I agree with Planning and Sustainability. It's this, and if you look at the map and how that parcel fits on the map, it's surrounded quite by CM3 at the south and the west, and CM2 above, and RX on this end. And RH includes a 14-story Hollywood East apartments, an 8-story Hollywood townhouse, and three 2-story courtyard apartments, which are over at this end. You can see them in that aerial. And directly to the south is the new Providence Office Park building, which is 6 stories. So it's RH. RH with 4-to-1 is a high-density multi-dwelling zone. It's the code in 33120.030 says allowed housing is characterized by medium to high height and relatively high percentage of building coverage. RH zones will be well served by transit facilities or near commercial services. And this zone meets all those standards. This area meets all those standards. There's within one block of the Hollywood Transit Center, served by 3 different MAX lines, 3 different bus lines, and there's also the number 12 on Sandy, which is right here. This town center has arguably more transit and amenities than even Gateway. They're in the Hollywood Plan District. The maximum height on that property, on that area, is 100 feet. And, of course, the existing tower is 176, but 100 feet is is the tallest that's allowed in Hollywood today. So I support keeping that at RH. I know you may get some testimony asking for something lower, but I just don't think it's appropriate right there with all the tall buildings already there and a block from transit or 2 blocks from transit. And since I have more time, number 1777 is on Southeast Main and 25th. It's a split parcel, picture aerial on the back, which is half in R1, half in R5. R2 makes a lot of sense. That's what staff and PSC recommended. I would even argue it could go to R1. There are people on the dead-end street to the west of it who are arguing that that is too much for the neighborhood. On the other hand, on that half block, there's 8 houses, and four of them are duplexes or fourplexes. So it's already at a missing middle thing going on there. So I think the R2 at least, if not R1, are appropriate.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Good afternoon. Good
afternoon. I am Django Amerson. I own a piece of property. The address is 4404 Northeast Holman. It's over by Fernhill Park. I've owned it for about 5 or 6 years, and it's a 15,000-plus square foot lot. When I first came into the city to zoning planning, they said, wait, hold on, because it's zoned R10, but there is R5 all around it. And they said, you know, there's going to be a change in the comprehensive plan and overlays, et cetera, and in the base plan. Wait and see what happens with your parcel. It's 15,000 plus square feet. If you look at the property, it is appropriate for two nice-sized homes for the neighborhood. All the neighbors that I've spoken to have no issues with changing that zoning to R5. Again, right next to it is existing R5. I see no reason why it should still be R10. I understand that the owner can go through a Type 3 zoning amendment. This would be sort of unduly onerous and time-consuming. In speaking with Nan Stark, Nan told me to come in and make a Hail Mary, so to speak, here at this meeting. I appreciate that. Again, 4404 Northeast Holman, just a last-ditch effort to change to what would be a very logical R5 zoning. Thank you.
Thank you.
If it was R5, though, you'd be three units, and you might have to do three. Would that be all right?
I really honestly, too, is what it would be. I don't think the shotgun row houses thing is what the neighbors would like or what anybody would like. It's,
so then what you actually want is R7, because if it's 15,000 square feet.
I'll take R7.
Okay.
Yeah. That's great.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Next three, please, Carla.
Are Jeffrey Clare, Dana Krawczyk, and Robert Johnson.
Good afternoon.
Can I start speaking?
Yeah, sure.
If you just leave the microphones off when you're done speaking, you'll be fine. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Jeffrey Clare. I'm following up from Mr. Django. I'm interested in purchasing and developing that property. So speaking to Amanda, yes, you can actually get three. You could fit three if you had R5 zoning. And I would like to do a cottage cluster in there, possibly three with three ADUs. And I think it would serve the neighborhood much better than a large McMansion, which now with that R10 zoning, that's the only thing that can be built on that. It's a very onerous. It's $100,000. It's a year to go through these Type 3 zone map amendment. And it is abutting an R5 right now, and there is an R2 right across the street. So I concur with Mr. Django that it would R7 would be wonderful, but R5, in my opinion, would be even better.
Thank you.
So Mr. Django testified that the neighbors are supportive. Do you agree with that?
Yes. I honestly think R7 would be easier with the neighbors than an R5.
Okay. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Dana Krawczyk, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. I submitted testimony digitally, but also handed some out because there's a map on it, and you should receive it. This is a new amendment request on behalf of XPO Logistics. The address of the property is 2169 Northwest Thurman, which is the northeast corner of Northwest Thurman and Northwest 22nd. It's adjacent to the EC company. We're requesting that this parcel, the entire parcel, be rezoned from IG1 to CM3 with a design review and Main Street, Center's Main Street overlay. And there's two reasons for this. One is to avoid a nonconforming use and development, so that's Category 3 that Marty spoke about. And the second is to correct a mistake in a split zone, which is the fourth category. I'll start with the nonconforming use and development. This property is included in the Conway Master Plan area, so it's a unique property. Even though it's zoned IG1, as part of the adopted master plan, EXD uses are currently allowed on that property. The maximum height is 150 feet. Base FAR is 3-1 with transfers available. It's subject to design review, and its transportation impacts have been studied extensively with that kind of development. It's subject to the LID that will fund the jug handle, which is a $7 million transportation improvement, and it's also subject to TDM measures. So it's essentially EXD property now, even though the base zone is IG1. New construction hasn't occurred on that property yet, but we expect that it will within the term of the master plan, which is until 2022. So after the master plan expires, that would be non-conforming use and non-conforming development. So we're asking that the zone be changed now so that we can avoid that non-conforming development. The mistake in the split zone is because the comp plan designation has been converted already to MUU, which is the highest intensity mixed-use urban comp plan designation. a portion of the property already has the Main Street overlay. So it's got an IG-based zone that limits retail and an M overlay that requires retail. So there's a conflict. There's a mistake right there. So we're asking that the entire parcel get the appropriate CM3 zoning, which is what the balance of the master plan is. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Was this considered when we did the comprehensive plan?
The comprehensive plan designated it as MUU, so yes, it was. But the base zone, for whatever reason, wasn't changed.
And did you raise it with the Planning Commission?
I didn't, because we didn't realize this was an issue until late last year.
Got it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your testimony. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Johnson. I am speaking about the property that is at the corner of Sheridan and Southwest Fifth Avenue. And as I stated, I'm Bob Johnson, the president and CEO of Terwilliger Plaza, which is, as we proudly state, a community of empowered and engaged people. Terwilliger Plaza is a nonprofit life plan community, also known as a continuing care retirement community, located near downtown Portland. A life plan community is a community that provides a broad range of services to persons 65 years of age and older. Founded in the 1950s, Terwilliger Plaza received its first residents following completion of the original structure in 1962. We currently serve about 350 members who reside in independent or assisted living apartments. We also employ about 170 people with living wage jobs. The Planning Commission has recommended approval of the MAP refinement project, including adjusting the zoning of a lot that Terwilliger Plaza controls, and that is at Sheridan and Southwest Fifth Avenue, that will combine all of the Terwilliger Plaza property under the preferred zoning of RH, high density residential. I thank the Planning Commission for supporting this change. I urge a positive vote by the Council. I thank you for helping Terwilliger Plaza resolve this zoning issue, which will allow us to explore the possibility of a major expansion of our services. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Bob, can I just make one observation?
Sure.
Each of us gets invited probably annually to come up to Terwilliger Plaza and participate in a breakfast forum. And I have to just say, as an elected official, I think that's the hardest forum it's the most challenging, because you look up and you've got retired judges, elected officials, land use lawyers. It's a murderer's row of people that follow the city very closely. And I always figured
in my chair.
Huh?
You ought to sit in my chair.
It's a pleasure.
They serve you breakfast, Commissioner Fish?
Yeah. it's Mr. Mayor.
Don't they serve everybody breakfast now?
No.
It's an incredible cross-section of our community.
It really is.
For someone like me that wasn't born here, it's also kind of a history lesson because of just the remarkable people that live there.
Well, we thank you very much for your support. And any of you come, I'll make you a deal for breakfast, certainly.
So I have a question.
Yes.
Is this the site that we considered during the comprehensive plan, or is this another one?
No, this is the same one. Yeah, this is the same one, and I'm just thanking you for your support.
Yeah, as I remember, we said come back. We'll do it in the next package. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next three, please.
Are John Ross, John Brunton, and Samuel Eckhart, and they'll be followed by Dean Vanderbush, Gina Vanderbush, and Lou Montgomery.
Good afternoon, sir. Could you start for us?
Yes. I'm John Ross. Thanks for this opportunity to talk. I'm testifying about change number 1799, 705 and 815 North Fremont, from CM2 to CM3D. I've lived on Albina for 15 years, and I don't oppose high density, but I do question the scale of a building of this size, up to 7 stories, on a street of predominantly 1 to 2 story homes. I worry about the shadow well that will swallow my garden and discourage my chickens from laying, and the continued loss of urban canopy on our block. Most of all, though, I worry that this model of density, which encourages luxury apartments and condos, is erasing the racial, economic, and age diversity of our neighborhood. No matter how well-intended, this model is overwhelming our neighborhood with white beer and entertainment consumers of a certain class. The Elroy Gardens housing development on Fremont between Albina and Borthwick is home to low-income neighbors who are racially diverse, frequently immigrants, and includes some of our older neighbors on the block. Many of them also happen to be taxi cab drivers who make use of the ample parking lot on the property. I know parking lot is a dirty word nowadays, and rightly so, but I think it's important to remember how this model of density may be displacing a unionized immigrant cab driving workforce living in the heart of the city for a homogenous mass of unprotected contract workers circling and polluting constantly on our streets with Uber and Lyft decals on their windows. At some point, we need to look at the unintended consequences of the aggressive infill development that's happening in North Portland. Thanks very much for your
consideration. Thank you for your testimony. Commissioner Daly, did you have a
question? No, John's just an old friend, and I'm enjoying his testimony.
Very good.
Yes. Is this the site that we, you and I, lost on in the comprehensive plan, or is this, are they doing even more on Fremont?
I'm not sure. I haven't been engaged until recently, but Dave Cole, who sat here first testifier, was probably involved back.
I'll ask stuff about it. Thank you.
Very good. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is John Brunton. I'm here representing Greater Portland Bible Church in Southwest Portland. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. Notice was only given shortly last night, so forgive me as I read my script here.
Not a problem.
Greater Portland Bible Church and Habitat for Humanity request a zoning map change to lot 9900, located on Capitol Hill Road from R7 to R2. Zoning for the purpose of providing permanently affordable home ownership. The property is owned by Greater Portland and adjacent to our worship facilities and parking lot. The lot is also an environmental conservation overlay zone, which limits how it can be developed. Greater Portland is in discussions with Habitat to sell the parcel at a discounted price to allow for the development of affordable housing as a part of the ministry of Greater Portland Bible Church and the mission of Habitat. The two organizations have a history of partnership, which started several years ago, actually finished a development in 2015 on a half-acre parcel. It was sold at a discount so it could develop, Habitat could develop 7 units of affordable home ownership housing. This parcel is 6877 and is adjacent to the proposed parcel and is zoned R2. The change meets the 2035 comprehensive plan goal of affordable housing development in areas with close proximity to transit, services, and amenities. It also meets the anti-displacement goals and the goal of helping to close the minority home ownership gap. The site is within a half mile of the Hillsdale Commercial Center, Burlingame Commercial Area, and Southwest Barber Boulevard. We thank you in advance for your consideration.
Thanks for being here.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
Commissioner Fish. We have a package before us of upzoning some affordable housing developments, and the theory there is we want to give people the ability to serve even more people. You are proposing to partner with Habitat to build on your footprint, correct?
Correct.
And I'm going to ask staff about that later, but there is underutilized church property throughout the city, and there are some places like in Inner Northeast where there are some churches that have an older congregation and they're land rich, and this question's come up quite a bit about is that, you know, what should be our role in facilitating housing that's within the footprint of a, I'm saying church, it could be a synagogue or it could be any faith institution, but I'll use church as a shorthand. And from my point of view, the benefit, of course, is you've got the built-in connection with the faith community. You've got a neighbor that is caring about the people that are living there. And so it's kind of a home run. So I'm going to be interested in knowing more about that. But I also think that as churches that have declining membership in certain parts of our city are grappling with this question, if we are more flexible and allowing housing on the site, we actually are able to save the church and create a synergy, which I think is very positive for the community.
I agree.
So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Good afternoon.
My name is Samuel Eckhart, and I serve as the construction coordinator with Habitat for Humanity, Portland Metro East. I'm here today to request your consideration of a zoning map change for the same parcel that John mentioned, tax lot 9900. It's in the Hillsdale neighborhood on Southwest Capitol Hill Road that is owned by the Greater Portland Bible Church. It is adjacent to a 7-home condo project that Habitat built and sold in 2015. The church was also the previous owner of that property and sold it to Habitat at a discount so that we could provide home ownership opportunities to low-income working families. In fact, Mayor Wheeler, you may remember speaking at the key ceremony that summer when we were selling those seven homes. The church is again willing to consider selling property to Habitat at a discounted price, which is very exciting given the challenges affordable housing developers face in finding property in today's housing market. While this is a much larger parcel at 3.5 acres, the goal is to build 25 to 30 units of housing with parking in the form of townhome-style condominiums. We are requesting that the zoning be changed to R2 from the current R7 zoning in order to help mitigate the development challenges presented on the site, including the environmental conservation overlay zone. We expect only a small portion of this overall site would be developed given the density of trees and slope. The homes Habitat would develop on the site would be permanently affordable homeownership units, which means that not only will they be sold to first-time low-income home buyers initially, but they will remain affordable to buyers in the future. This will help ensure economic diversity in the Hillsdale neighborhood. This project would also help close the minority homeownership gap, as 80% of Habitat home buyers are households of color with an average annual income under $40,000. Habitat also builds homes to meet the specific needs of families, and 30% of our buyers have had a family member with a disability. In closing, I'd like to thank you for considering this project that would help provide more than 100 people with stable, affordable housing in a neighborhood with great schools, access to transit, and nearby amenities.
So was this amendment heard by the Planning and Sustainability Commission?
No.
I just want to personally thank you, Greater Portland Bible Church, for really being a true community-facing church. I mean, from what you've done with Habitat for Humanity to sharing your facilities from everyone from Frisbee golf to AA meetings. I mean, yeah. You are a center of the community, and I thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Didn't realize you were aware of that. Thanks. Appreciate
well,
it.
Well, I know Dan's aware of that because he was standing right next to me at that
key ceremony.
Yeah. We were commenting on the Frisbee golf, and we were concerned we hadn't brought our Frisbee, so we really couldn't practice that day. But that was a great project, and I appreciate the good work you guys are trying to do here. Commissioner Fritz?
I was just wondering, do you still have a pastor who's one of the pastor's names is Amanda Fritz? Could you please apologize to her? I'm really sorry. She must have just a dreadful time of having to mess up with all that. There used to be somebody with the same name as me who was a pastor there. I have always looked for the opportunity to apologize for embroiling her and besmirching her good name.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, all three of you. Appreciate your testimony. Next three, please, Carla.
Are Dean Vanderbush, Gina Vanderbush, and Lou Montgomery. And they'll be followed by Scott Doherty, Gary Okamoto, and Gary Daniels.
Good afternoon. Would you like to start, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
Hello. Okay. I'm testifying in regards to 10840 Southwest 55th Avenue. In West Portland Park.
And could I get your name for that?
Dean Vanderbush.
Thank you, Dean.
Thank you. I come before you today to request a zoning change in West Portland Park, Block 1, from R10 to R7. West Portland Park, Block 1, is unique. It is the only block in West Portland Park that is zoned R10. This is causing a major problem for my daughter and me. We bought a lot in West Portland Park, Block 1, because the lot is zoned R10, we're not allowed to build a home on the lot. This is a good buildable lot, according to city planners, and we consulted with them before buying the lot, and they said there shouldn't be any problem with building on it. But we later discovered through the zoning that it can't be built on because in West Portland Park, this whole block was owned by the land developer a few months in July 26, 1979. As you probably know, there is a rule in the zoning that prohibits building a home on a lot if it was ever under the same ownership as an abutting property after July 26, 1979. So under the current zoning, because the land developer owned the entire block, for a few months after July 79, our lot must sit vacant forever. As you can imagine, this is a terrible disappointment to my daughter and me. If the commissioners change the zoning for this block from R10 to R7, there are two provisions in the zoning that would allow us to build a home.